I'm Betty Sheila, and Fred McDermott was my second cousin.
For most of his life, Fred McDermott lived with the shadow of having killed a man attached to his name. He died a free but broken man. His case was never exonerated.
1905.
Well, that was when Fred was born, and my father was born in 1906, so they were similar age. Him and Dad were very, very close. When he left school, he had several jobs over there, but then he decided to go shearing. And, of course, being a shearer, they used to go from shed to shed, and he ended up over near Grenville.
1936.
There was a man called Henry Lavis who run a shop on the side of the road. It was a general store with a petrol bowser, and the bowser was one of those type of bowsers that you had to pump the petrol up with a handle. At 6:30 in the morning, he heard a car come in to get petrol, so he got up and went out to serve this car. And when his wife got up, he had disappeared.
1946.
Fred was drinking around a campfire with several of his knockabout mates, a couple of women, and his girlfriend, who used to drink very heavy, and she was very argumentative when she got drunk. And because they were in the area, and it was commonly talked about the disappearance of Lavis and the murder, she said, "Oh, I know you murdered Lavis. You murdered him for a couple of gallons of petrol. I know you murdered him." And to shut her up, he said, "Yes, of course I murdered him. I murdered him and cut him up and buried him in the sale yards."
Yeah, I bumped him off and buried him in the sale yards.
And the other couple of people that was there, they heard this. And because there was a large reward posted for information about the murder of Lavis, they went to the CIB and reported. So the police then arrested Fred.
1947.
He went to court in Bathurst. They found him guilty and sentenced him to hang. And he was screaming out at them, "I'm as innocent as a baby. I'm innocent. I never did this. I never did this." He was waiting to be hung. He was on death row, as they call it. In the meantime, it was an election year. Labor got in and they abolished hanging in Australia. And so they commuted his sentence to life in prison. While he was in there, he actually got quite clever and he wrote a lot of letters and he wrote to people and asked them to help him. And he served 5 years and 3 months of his sentence. And then there was a young reporter who believed in Fred and believed that he was innocent. He proved that those tyres could not have possibly fitted the car that Fred was travelling in. The car that came into the garage to get the petrol had bigger tyres than the one that Fred was travelling in.
1952.
They had the Royal Commission, and because of the evidence that Tom Farrell gave, they then released Fred. They let him out. They never, ever cleared his name. They just let him out. Yeah, poor fella, he came out. He couldn't find work. Like, no one would employ him because he was still considered the bloke that killed Harry Lavis. So he just drifted along in life. And he was just a broken man.
1977.
I was cooking Sunday lunch and I needed some cream and I went over to the shop. The Sunday papers were on the counter and when I read underneath, it was Fred. And it said that he had leukaemia and they'd only given him a short time to live. And he was in an old age home in Lidcombe. And he died only a month after that. He died.
2004.
I published a book called The Shearer's Tale, which was an account of the disappearance of Harry Lavis in 1936, the vast search for him, the trial of McDermott, the Royal Commission and his release, and his sorry end under the shadow of maybe being the man who'd murdered Lavis.
I looked in White Pages and found Tom Malumbi's number, rang him up. "I'm a descendant of Fred McDermott's and I would like a copy of the book." And that's how I started my association with Tom Malumbi.
6 weeks later.
Yeah, this is my property, Brangan Hill, north from Grenville. This is where I was just driving along, and when I first spotted the white object on the site near the base of a tree, I thought it was one of those white puffball things, and I'd never seen one that side before, but apparently it wasn't a puffball. I got out of the ute. And I proceeded across to the tree, picked it up and turned it round and noticed the two open eye sockets, and I immediately knew what it was. put it back into the seat of the ute and proceeded to follow the bones up the hill. So we're scattered over a fairly wide area, in a line about probably 10 to 12 feet wide or so.
In a cave up on a steep, rocky area, they found the remains of Henry Lavers that had been there for 70 years. As time went past, nothing happened, like there was nothing more on the news or anything. And I said to my friend Jen, I said, they're not doing anything about this. I said, they're just going to sweep it under the carpet.
She was driven by a real sense of justice for Fred, because Fred had been such a good friend of her father's, and she really, really wanted to clear his name for the benefit of the whole family.
I rang Tom again. Is there anything I can do to get Fred's name cleared? And he said, Betty, the way the law stands, you can't, because in Australia law, dead men can't appeal. And I said, well, if they have to change the law, let them change it. Let them do it.
2006.
My collection. I have got every written word that's ever been written on Fred. Yeah. And there's folders, there's heaps of them. He actually got quite clever and he wrote a lot of letters and he wrote to people and asked them to help him. I wrote a letter to the Attorney General and Richard Torbay actually gave that letter to the Attorney General. And I've always known Richard. My kids went to school with Richard.
Richard Torbay is the independent member for the Northern Tablelands in the New South Wales Parliament.
And then the Attorney General went into Parliament on the 2nd of December 2010. And passed a law that I was able to take Fred's case back to the appeal court in Sydney.
My role was to put the appeal together after it got to the court. It was Betty who got it there.
Eventually they gave us a date on the 28th of November 2012.
Most people who go to court are very apprehensive, and Betty certainly was. Part of her brain knew that the evidence was so good that the case really had to win.
After about 2.5 hours... they got up and they went out. And then they came back and he said, we've heard enough.
But there was another big part of her that was thinking, no, I just don't believe it until it really happens.
You know, you don't really know right until that last second that it's going to go through.
Oh, it's fairly steep. It'd be half from here, probably another 50 yards or so from where we are now.
He said this man's life was ruined and he said, we've heard enough.
The appeal was allowed. The conviction was quashed and the verdict of acquittal was entered. And they walked out. I think it's a very significant case as showing what a lone battler can do against the odds, against the whole system. Fred, in a way, did that for himself when he was in jail, writing the letters that got the information that triggered the inquiry. And I think Betty, picking it up from Fred, maybe, in the family tradition, did it all over again in getting it referred to the court.
Like, if my great-grandchildren's children look up our family history, when I'm dead and gone, there's an acquittal there. You know, not a murderer, there's an acquittal. And that's very important because your family history goes on forever. It's not just our generation. You know, that family history's there for as long as time's there.
My real name is Edmund Markham, but they call me Ted.
Grenfell.
My name's Tom Malumbi. I'm a barrister and author.
Sydney.
I'm Betty Sheila, and Fred McDermott was my second cousin.
Armidale.